Today's sharing the Daf Yomi is the very last Daf in the beautiful Masechta Bava Kama, Daf Kuf Yotes. We are learning today, Lili Nishmas, a number of people. I just got a lot of the names for the recent week. So we're learning Lili Nishmas, Mark Salzman, Mordechai Aaron, Ben Shimon Leib. We're learning Lili Nishmas, May Sachs, Maim, Bas Zev Wolf, Rabbi Shalom Kornblum, Rav Shalom Ben Mordechai, Bella Windholtz, Harry Beer, Tzvi Mendel Ben Pinchos, Adele Goldstein, Israel Silverstein, Yisrael Ben Zevdov, Molly Spitz, Malka, Bas Eliezer Yoel, Bella Goldschmidt, and also Chaim Ben Rev Levi, and finally Seymour Siklik, Shmuel Ben Mordechai. All the neshamas we learn for should have an aliyah from our learning. And of course, we continue to learn for the safety and success of Tzahal, the Kochos HaBitachon. They should all be safe. Nebuch, there's still terrorist attacks going on in Eretz Yisrael itself. May the soldiers be able to do everything they have to do in safety and with success to bring back the Chatufim, to have peace for all of Klal Yisrael. We began the Masechta Bava Kama shortly after Simchas Torah this year. And B'ezras Hashem, we're learning all about these Arba Avos Nezikin and all the damages. May our learning of this prevent damage for all of Klal Yisrael. Let it be Shalom on all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so again, with thanks to HaKadosh Baruch for allowing us to finish the Messiah. This Masechta Bava Kama, which as we mentioned previously, according to some, is only the first 10 prakim of Maseches Nizakim. So, Mitzvah Hashem, when we start tomorrow above Metziah, it's a new Masechta, but it's also a continuation of Maseches Nizakim. So, we begin on the very second line, Kuf Yotes Amud Aleph, quoting the Mishnah, where we said, Lo Mishomri Peres Uchuli. We said that a person isn't allowed to go and purchase things from the guards, the watchmen of these orchards, because there's a presumption that maybe they stole stuff from them. So Rav, that's the gear that we have, but if you look in the Masoros Hashas, Os Aleph, he says it's either Rava or Rabba. It can't be Rav because Abaye wouldn't have spoken with Rav. So either Rava or Rabba, Zovin Shabishta Me'arisa. He bought, Rashi says Shabishta is Chavile Zemoros, these bundles of branches. So either Rava or Rabba bought them from his Oris. So Abaye was surprised. How can you do this? We learned it on Mishnah. Only Abaye said, wait a second, what? Nan, below Mishomri Peros, Eitzim Uperos. We learned it on Mishnah. Don't go buy from these people. They're suspected of maybe skimming off the top, and he's selling you stolen good when he sells you these woods, these bundles of brandage, or the fruits from the orchard. So Rava tells him, or Rabba, whoever it was, Amalei, he says, Hani Mili Bishomer the Lesle Begufa the Aramidi. When the Mishnah said you can't buy for them, that's when they have no share in the land. They are just pure watchmen. They are just pure guards over that area. But they don't own any of those branches, and they don't own any of the fruits. However, this Oris, this sharecrop of Oris, the Islay Begabe, he's entitled to a portion of the land, or he owns a certain portion of the land. So therefore, he's entitled to a certain amount of the bundles of branches or of the fruit. So there's a chance that I'm buying his stuff and not Geneva stuff. So therefore, Eimah Midinav Shei Komizadim. So I have the right, halachically, to say that I'm buying kosher stuff. I'm buying things from him that he has a right to have. Tana Rabbanan, we learned the following brisa. Shomrei Peros, Lokim Mehen. You are allowed to purchase from these guards, from these watchmen of the fruits. Kishehem Yoshvin Umochrin. Vasalim Lifneim. Viturtani Lifneim. You are allowed to purchase them if they're selling basically in a very open way. That the baskets are publicly in the front. We'll see it's in the front yard, and there are it's visible that this is a store, so to say, that they're publicly selling. And as Rashi says, the turtani means the scales which they weigh out the fruits. So Moznaim Gidolin, Umochrin Peres Mishko, Kiderech HaTagrim. So, and they're selling things the normal way that it's done. They're not doing things surreptitiously, they're not doing things on the sly. The Kiva, the Mochrin Befarhesia, and since they're selling in such a public fashion, Rashi says, obviously, lo gonvum, they didn't steal them. So as long as they're doing it in this way, that's allowed. However, like we pointed out in the Mishnah, the kulam sharmu hadmein, but if they're saying, shh, don't tell anybody you got this over here, and you know, they're doing it on the sly, so then also you have to be concerned that it's all stolen stuff, and you're not allowed to go purchase from them. Furthermore, you're only allowed to go and purchase from them when they're doing this in the front. From the entranceway into the garden. But if they're doing it in the back, where nobody can see them, not the fahesia, because again, we have to be concerned that they're skimming off the top and that they're selling the things that fell off the truck as opposed to that it's their property. Itmar was said Gazlan me'emas mutar liknosi beno. A guy is known as a robber. No, he's selling stuff. When are you allowed to purchase from him and not assume that it is stolen property? So here it is Rav. Rav Amar, achete rov bishalo. The majority of the items that he's selling have to be his. As Rashi says, it has to be mamono. It has to be his stuff. Mishalo. Below gizela. Without it being stolen. So if the majority of stuff is not stolen, so then hochen acharov, the nanim vino. Then you have the right halachically to follow the majority, and since the majority is not stolen, you can purchase stuff from him. Shmuel's much more lenient. Ushmuel amar afilu miut shelo. As Rashi says, talinon, we have the right halachically to state, v'yamrinon, hai midi diyovle midi dehu. Since some of it is his, I have the halachic right to assume that what I'm purchasing from him is in fact his and is not ganvit stuff. How do we paskin? So, orile Rav Yehuda. So, Rav Yehuda paskin la ada dayola. Ada is the name of a person. Rashi says shem ish, and dayola means he was the shamish of the rabbanim. So, Rav Yehuda permitted the rabbi's shamashim kedivrei haomer afilu miyuchlo, even in accordance with this lenient opinion of Shmuel, that as long as even a minority of the stuff that they're selling is theirs, so then you're allowed to go and purchase it from them. Next, where he says mamon. Masur, if you have money that belongs to a masur, Rashi says, this is the mouse, and this is the guy that told on the Jewish people, Hamoser Mamun Chaveru Lianosim, and he gives over Jewish money to the armed robbers, to the government. So, Mamon Masur, so Rav Huna of Rav Yehuda, we have a machlokes between them. We don't know which one said which. Chadamar Mutar Li Abdo Biyat. So, this money that belongs to the Moser, so one of the two, Rav Huna or Rav Yehuda, said you're allowed to actively go and destroy it with your own hands. His property is hefker, and you can destroy it with your own hands. The other one said, no, the Chadamar also li abdo biyad, you can't go and actively destroy it with your hand. As Rashi points out, we learn in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, in the second paragraph, Daf Chavovah Mudbeis, Demutu la'abed gufo biyodayim. You actually are allowed to sometimes, under certain very specific situations, which almost never apply, halacha l'maisa, you're allowed to actually go kill him. Diktani haminim v'amsoros moridin osom labor. You're allowed to throw them into a pit v'lo malin. And if they're in the pit already, you don't have to bring them out. So therefore, under very select circumstances, you're allowed to kill them. However, the machlokas v'huna v'yuda, are you allowed to go and destroy their property? Now, man diyama mutu li'abdo biyad, the one that says you can actively go and destroy their property, says, how could their property be less strict than their person? Lo yehe mamono chomer migufo. How can you say you can kill the guy, but you can't go destroy his property? That doesn't make any sense. If you can kill the guy, then you're allowed to go destroy his property actively. But the opinion says you can't. Man diyama osu li'abdo, that you can't go destroy his property, says, and you know why? Because dilma, maybe he's going to have a descendant that's a tzaddik, that's a good person, is a chassid, uksid. And the pasuk tells us, this is a pasuk that we have from Eov, and this pasuk in Eov says, now we have the gear, so yochin rasha v'tzaddik yilbash. So the bad one, the evil guy, he goes and is there, he prepares things, yochin, he prepares things, however, the tzaddik yilbash, and the tzaddik will be the one that will actually wear what he prepared. Now, in the Masoros HaShas, Osei, he says, the word Rosh is not in the Pasuk, and he says, Les Ateva Rosh. So why is it here? So he says, HaShas Mifarei Shlikra, the Shas is explaining, who is yochin? So the Shas put in the words, Rosh, and adds the word that who prepared it was the Rosh. And now the tzaddik will get the benefit of it. So therefore, the opinion that says you can't go destroy his property by hand is because the guy's going to die. You'll have to kill him, even if that's the situation. And then his property will go to his descendants, and maybe you'll have a righteous descendant. Rav Chista, havalei ha'ari. So Rav Chista once had a sharecropper, the hava tokil v'yohiv, tokil v'shokil. So Rashi explains, tokil v'yohiv, he would give to Rav Chista a portion. He would mete out one portion to Rav Chista, and then Tokel Vishokel, and then he would mete out one portion Linav Shei. Now, Rashi says he was medaktik b'chaluk, he was very careful in this dividing up the property, the Eino Mevata b'chalukul klum, and he was so exact, he wouldn't give up even a penny of what he was entitled to. Alternatively, Rashi says, Loshen Acher, Metzo Yenotel. He would give 50% to Rav Chista, and he took 50% for himself. So Metzo Yenotel, Viderech Shar Harisin Litoshlish, but everybody else was only taking a third of the crop as the sharecropper's portion. So Rav Chista was very unhappy about this, Salke, and he took him away from being the sharecropper. Bekara Anavshe, and he pronounced about himself the following pasuk. This is a pasuk from Mishlei, where it says, "Bitzofun letzadik, it will be hidden away for the tzadik, chel chote, the handiwork, the wealth of the sinner." So Rav Chisda was apparently saying, this guy's cheating me, and therefore I got rid of him, and therefore all of his efforts ultimately will come to me. Now, this pshat in Rashi is a little bit difficult to understand, because what did he do wrong? If he was exact in his dividing up the field like the first pshat in Rashi, well, what's wrong with that? The person's allowed to be exact. You get exactly your amount, I get exactly my amount. That's actually something that's praiseworthy normally, that he didn't want to take anything that didn't belong to him. And according to the second pshat in Rashi, that he took 50%. Well, if that was the deal, why can't he take the 50%? Just because all the others are taking 33%, but if the deal was 50%. So the Mefarshim, such as the Ben Yehuda, bring down the following idea, that when he says that he weighed it out, Tokil v'yohiv and Tokil v'shokil, he was doing two different sets of measures. So when he weighed it out for Rav Chisda, he put a stone in the bottom of the produce, so it felt like the produce was heavier. And then when he weighed it out for himself, he took out the stone, so he says, look, I'm using the same weights, I'm using the same balance scale, but he had artificially weighed down that portion that he gave to Rav Chisda, so he was actually cheating actively Rav Chisda. Alternatively, that he was doing it with different size measures, and he would measure out to Rav Chisda with a smaller measure or a different measure than he was measuring out to himself. So in other words, the Ben Yehuda and others explained that he was cheating him. So therefore, that's why Rav Chisda got rid of him. Okay. Ki ma tikvas chonev, ki yivtza, ki yeshel eloka nafsho. We have another pasuk from Iyov. This pasuk from Iyov says that this person who's a chonev, he's a flatterer, he's a hypocrite. So what is going to happen to him when he steals? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to go, ki yeshel eloka nafsho. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to go and kill him. Now, he's going to take his soul. Now, whose soul are we talking about? Are we talking about the ganav, the one who's stealing over here? Or are we talking about the one who Nebuch is the one who's stolen from? So it's machlokes. Hu nevrechista, chadam ha-nafsho de-nigzal, chadam ha-nafsho shogazan. That this pasuk is referring to either that it's going to cause the death of the ganav, which all of us certainly would understand, or it's going to cause the death of the people that were stolen from. And that's difficult to understand. And the Gemara now explains it. Man diomar nafsho shel nigzal, the one who says that it is the opinion of this, either of Huna or of Chisda, that it's talking about the person who was stolen from, his neshama will be taken away. They'll say, because the pasuk says, Kein archos kol botzea botza es nefesh ba'olav yikoch. Because we have another pasuk in Mishlei that explains it, that anyone who steals, he steals the soul of the person that he steals from. And therefore, this is talking about the terrible thing that the ganav did to the nignav, but the nignav is the one that loses his soul. So I once heard an understanding of this in my rebbeim. Not necessarily in this Gemara, but I think it's a very true idea for this Gemara as well. That when a person works and earns money, so that's an hour of his life, 2 hours of his life. Knew he made $100 an hour. So he just gave 1 hour of his life, that $100. When you steal that $100 from him, you're essentially stealing 1 hour of his life. So it makes sense to say, okay, when you steal from somebody, that you're actually nigzal his soul, ki yeshel eloka nafsho. You are going and stealing his life from him. So that's possibly one understanding over here. In any event, that's the man diomed. It says it's talking about the nigzal. Now, man diomed nafsho shel gazlan. It's talking about the ganav over here, the gazlan. So you have a different pasuk. Also for Mishlei, and this pasuk says, "Al tigzal dol kidalhu." Don't steal from the poor person because he's poor. "Val tadaki oni bashar," and don't go and rob the poor person at the gate. "Ki Hashem yoriv rivab," God is going to protect him. He's going to fight their battles with them. "Vikova es koveim nofish," and the ones who steal from them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take their life from them. So it clearly refers over here to the gazlan. No, what does each one do with the other one's pasuk? The idoch nami, the one who said that it, the second opinion that we just said, that it's the God of the Gazan that's going to be his soul taken away. No, Hoksiv Nefesh Ba'olav Yikach. How do you explain the first passage that says it was the soul of the person who was stolen from that is taken away? So the Gemara says, my Ba'olav, what does it mean? How does he hold the word Ba'olav? It means the Ba'olav right now, Ba'olav the Hashta, which is the Gazan who stole from the Ganav. So he's now considered the Ba'olav, and he's the one that gets punished. Oh, Lishitaso, it's the Gan of Gazlan who always gets punished. The Idach Nami, no, according to the first opinion that says it is the soul of the niknav that is taken away. How do you explain the second pasuk where it says koves koveim nafesh? Bidach nami oksiv koves koveim nafesh. How do you explain that? So Gemara says, no, that's the explanation. Ma tam kavar. Why is the God of Gazlin punished? Ma tam the kova es koveim. Because mishum de koboi nefesh. Because they stole from this niknav. They caused his life to be taken away. Either he can't support his family, his children died as a result, he was impoverished, or he himself was impoverished, he couldn't afford his medications, he couldn't afford food, he couldn't afford his housing, he had to be thrown out on the street, and he got all sorts of illnesses, and he dies. So he caused this death, or as I explained, that he caused this person's life to be somewhat short, because the hours that he spent working for that parnas were taken away from him. So therefore, that's a matam kama, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu will go and kill the ganav or gazlan. Amr Yochim, Yochim tells us, Kolak Gozel Eschaveiro, Shava Pruta, if you even steal a Shava Pruta from another person, Kilu no tel mishmasu mimenu, it's as if you stole the soul. This works out very well with the idea that you even stole one penny, so he worked 5 minutes for that. So you stole 5 minutes of his life. So Kiizu no tel mishmasu mimenu, like you took some of his soul from him, or as I explained also, that you caused all of his parnasa to go away, and he can't support himself, and Nebuch, here, his children will die. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Kein archos kol botzei abad. So this is the way, if somebody steals, es nevish bolav yikach, that pasuk that we just quoted before. But then it quotes additional pesukim. V'omer, and we'll have to ask, why does it quote all these additional pesukim? V'omer, it further says, V'ochal kitzir cho v'lach necho yochlu banecho v'nosecho. Somebody that takes your kitzir, that takes your harvest, and takes your lechem, your bread, so he's killing your children. Now, why does it have to tell us that? We'll explain in a moment. V'omer, but then it says another pasuk. It says, Mechamaz b'nei Yehuda, from the people in Yehuda who were stolen from, asher shofku dom noki bi'artum. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay them back because they were chamsin on the Bnei Yehuda, and they caused innocent blood to be shed. Why is that pasuk there? We'll explain in a moment. And then finally, V'omer, one more pasuk. It says, El Shol ve'el beis hadomim asher al asher hemis es ha-givonim. And Shol and his house were held accountable for killing the givonim. And again, we'll have to explain why this pasuk is here, and when did we find that Shol actually killed the givonim? We don't find that. So the Gemara explains, my v'omer. We understood why you need the first pasuk, but why you need the additional three pesukim? It's because v'chi tema nefesh didei. Maybe it only means that he himself will be killed. Avol nefesh banu v'nosav. No, it won't impact his children. So toshma, that's why you need the second pasuk. B'sar banu v'nosav, that his lack of parnasa that you stole from him will never cause his children to also die. Then you need the next pasuk, v'chi tema hani mili hecho de lo yov dami. That's only in a situation where you outright stole and didn't pay for it. But if you're a chamsin, avol hecho de yov dumei lo, but if you actually paid for it, then maybe this punishment doesn't apply, so you took things against their will, albeit you paid them for it. You're a chamsin. So this is also a terrible iser, and you'll be punished for this horribly. Toshma, mechamas b'nei Yehuda, asher shoflu dam naki. Now the word should be bi'artzam, not bi'artzachem, as we have in parentheses. Okay, so that's why you need that pasuk to teach us that it applies to a chamsin as well. Okay, so these three pesukim hanimili hechod to cover b'yadayim. That's when you actually did the actual geneva yourself or the actual murder yourself. I will grom alo, but if you only indirectly caused that, maybe this punishment won't apply to you. That's why we need the fourth pasuk, the final pasuk about shol hamelach. Toshma el shol vel beis hadomim. This was said about Shaul and his house, that they caused the death of the Givonim, because we don't find anywhere that Shaul killed the Givonim. Now, again, I always say this whenever I talk about Shaul. Shaul was an unbelievably great person. He's a very tragic figure, one of the most tragic figures in all of Tanakh. And he's held accountable. It says he was greater than David HaMelech, but he was held accountable because he should have done differently and he should have done better. So on some measure, we have to understand who Shaul was. And that he was faced with a very difficult challenge, and which unfortunately didn't reach the full potential. So, where do we find the Chihech and Matinu Sharak Sholas Givonim? We don't find anywhere in Tanakh that Shol actually killed the Givonim. It was only a grama. Elamitosh Shaharak Novir Kohanim. When Shol found out that the Kohanim in Nov, and in fact helped David HaMelech, they gave him Goliath's sword, and they gave him the Lechem upon him, so he took it out of them and he killed them. So, you must speak him Lehem Mayim Muzzle. But these Givonim were supplying the Kohanim and Novir Kohanim with food. That was their parnasa. When Novir Kohanim was destroyed, they had no parnasa anymore. So Malo Vakos of Kilu Hargod. And therefore, instead about Shol, it's as if he killed the Givonim. Then we quote the Mishnah, says, Avalochim and Anoshim, you are allowed to go and purchase certain things. We said in Yehuda, in the Galil, And other times from women, we don't assume that the women didn't have permission from their husbands, that in those days, again, as we pointed out, the women were totally financially dependent upon the husband, so they had to give their handiwork to the husband. And if they gave certain things and sold certain things, you had to be concerned that it might be geneva. So here it's not geneva in these places, in these times. The Braisa elaborates. Tana Rabban, and the Braisa says, Lo chim en anoshim klit semer b'Yehuda. In Yehuda, like we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to go and purchase from the wives of these husbands, these klei tzemer, these utensils that were made out of wool, these clothing that were made out of wool. Uchlei pishton begolil, and in the Galil, they did it out of flax. You're allowed to go and do that. Avolo yenos ushmonim uslosos, but you're never allowed to go purchase from them wine, or oil, or flour, because as Rashi points out, the Rashi is over here on the very bottom line of the Rashi side, it goes on to the top of the Tosas side, the normal Tosas in the Masechta. So, shederech ha'ish lemochon, it was normal for men to go and sell in those days wine, oil, and flour, and not women. The Ein Oses Ishto Shaliach Lekach. It would be inappropriate. Women were Kokvud Bas Melech Penima. They didn't go out into the business world in those days, and therefore it would be inappropriate for a man to ask his wife to go and do that. So therefore, if the woman is selling it, it is concerning. Maybe she's doing this without her husband's permission. V'shema Ginavso Mibala. And she actually stole this from her husband. So therefore, don't purchase the Yeinu Shmonim Aslasos from the women. V'lo minu Avodim, and certainly not from Avodim, v'lo minu Atinokos, and even for young children, because that would be a very unusual that they had permission to go and sell these things, and therefore you have to assume that it's convict stuff. Abishol Omer, however, the women are allowed to sell small items. Mocheres Isha Biarba V'chamisha Dinar, she can sell a small amount of items. Kidei Lasos Kipa L'Rosha, in order that she could go buy herself a kerchief of some sort, the Ein Tabal Makbid. The husband doesn't mind if she sells these little small items, doesn't mention exactly what they are, but she's allowed to sell a small amount in order to go and make a kerchief for herself. Her husband is allowing that. And therefore, you're allowed to go purchase these things for them. But in all of these situations where we said you are allowed to do this, as we've mentioned already many times, from previous prices and from the Mishnah, the Chulun Sharmul Hadbin, if they say, shush, don't tell anybody where you got this from, so then you have to be concerned, also, that it's gone with stuff and you're not allowed to go purchase it from them. Then, a gabbai tztaka who's going around collecting from door to door is allowed to go and take from women a small amount of money. When they give him a small amount of money for tztaka, because we assume in that situation that the husband is not makbid on that small amount of money. However, avolo dova meruba, but he's not allowed to go and take from them a very large donation, because who said the husband gave permission for that large donation? Again, if the woman is independently wealthy, if it's her own money, then there's no concern. It's just, unless you know that, you have to be concerned that this large donation, she gives you $1,000. Well, how do we know that her husband is permitting her to give that? It's geneva if he doesn't give permission. Likewise, v'ha badod, and the people that go and press the olives at the olive press, Rashi says, bale beis habad shetagrin hein v'shemen. These are the merchants in the oil. So, lochin min nisheim zeisin v'shemen b'mida. You are allowed to go and purchase from their wives, lochin mehen, meaning from their wives, it's with a nun at the end, meaning feminine, so you're allowed to purchase from their wives, zeisin b'mida, oil when it's measured out, v'shemen b'mida, olives when it's measured out, rather, zeisin b'mida, v'shemen b'mida, and the oil when it's measured out, in specific amounts, in large amounts, as we see, because avolo zeisin b'muat, v'shemen b'muat, but not small amounts, because that could be something that she skimmed off the top, and she's surreptitiously selling, and the husband won't know. And she's selling large barrels, so of course he knows, I had 10 barrels over here, and now there's only 8, so of course she sold 2 of them. But if it's just a little bit of oil, a little bit of olives, so then we have to be concerned that she's skimming off the top, and you're not allowed to go purchase it from her. Rabbi Shimon goes, we'll omer, lochem yinoshim zeisim. Now the gears that we have is bimoed. However, many have the gears over here that it is bimoed in a small amount. So either on the moed, on chol moed, or when it's a small amount, you're allowed to go and purchase the olives from the women by Galil ho Elyon in the upper Galil, because shepa'amim odem bosh libkar al pesach basil. Because in that situation, when you're selling small amounts, or when you're selling it on chol moed, when you have a head to go and sell it on chol moed, so then you're allowed to go and sell it over there, as Rashi points out, because shashem shom biyoker, because oil is very, very precious over there. That's not an oil-producing region. Umakpid al-dover mu'at. And the husband will know every little bit. And therefore, his wife, even if she sells a small amount, the husband would notice that it was missing. And therefore, if the husband has given her permission to go and sell this, you can assume that that's the case. Now, why would you assume that the husband has given her permission to go and sell it? So Gemara says, "Shepa'amim odem bo shlimkar al pesach." So because the husband is embarrassed, he doesn't have a lot to sell, and he's embarrassed to sell such small amounts in his house, by the entrance to his house. So therefore, so it's less embarrassing in this situation. His wife is selling a little bit, so she has a little side business. It doesn't look so bad for him. Whereas he's selling it, that's all you have. So that is embarrassing to him. So therefore, in this situation where the oil is well known to be expensive, and the husband, Mistama, knows every little drop that how much is there. So then he, Mistama, gave permission to the wife, and you'll have to go purchase it from him. Now, in regard to what we just said, that your stock collector can only go take small amounts from the women unless he knows for a fact that the husband gave permission. So then, Ravina ikla be mechuza. Rashi tells us Ravina was the gabbai tzedakah, and he went around the streets of mechuza to go and collect tzedakah for the poor people. And asu nashe de be mechuza, and the women of mechuza ramu kamei kavle visheri. So they threw in front of him, they donated to tzedakah, kable. Rashi says the kable are sharshara zohav, golden chains. The shiare, that's smidim, those are bracelets. So they gave him very, very expensive stuff, and he accepted it. Kabil minayu. So wait a second. So amale rabba tosval ravina. So rabba tosval said to ravina, wait a second, how you left to go take it? Vatanya, we learned in the brisa that we just read, gabait stoka mekable mehen dover muad. The gabbai tzedakah can only collect from them small donations. We can't take a large donation. And these things that you just took, the kable visheri, these are very expensive things. They just donated a $500 golden chain, a $1,000 bracelet. So how are you allowed to go take that for them? Dover muat is only allowed to be collected. Avalo dover meruba. So how could you do this? So Ravina said back to Rabbi Tosfai, he said, Amalei, hane livnei mechuza dover muat ninu. This was a very rich neighborhood. The city of Mechuza was a very wealthy neighborhood. And when they gave these golden chains and these bracelets, that was pocket change to them. That was like giving a quarter from your pocket to the yoni that comes up to you. That you're allowed to go take from these women. They didn't give you their diamonds. They didn't give you their $20,000 jewelry. They gave you their $500 jewelry. For them, that's pocket change. For them, that's a davar muad. And therefore, you have to know your client. You have to know who you're dealing with. So Ravina knew that these women were giving something that the husband wouldn't object to. And therefore, it was theirs. And they had the right to give it away to tzedakah. And we also know that in the Beis HaMikdash, when the women came, so it said the Noshim came, Al HaNoshim. So the women donated to the Mishkan. The men didn't want to. The women donated, and it says that the husbands came there, so the gabbai tzedakah in the Beis HaMikdash could know, yeah, that the women are giving this with, quote, the permission of their husbands. Okay. Last Mishnah in this beautiful Masechta. The Mishnah says, now there's going to be a lot of technical things here about weaving and about carpentry. We're going to just somewhat superficially learn the details of weaving and carpentry. We're going to learn the basic principles that we're trying to learn over here in terms of what you're allowed to purchase and what you're not allowed to purchase, who owns something, who doesn't own something when they're a worker. So mochin shakobes motzi harel shalo. In the laundering process, the kobes, that's the launderer, he takes off certain pieces of the wool, or they come off during the soaking process, so he's entitled to keep them. He doesn't have to give them back to the person who gave him this garment to go and clean. Lasorek, the one who goes and he combs out the flax or combs out the sweaters that he's given, motzi, he's the anything that he gets, hare elu shel balabais. Here, these things belong to the balabais. He doesn't get to keep them. Koveis, noto shlosha chutin vein shelo. As part of the laundry process, so there are certain threads that are going to have to be taken out. So these belong as well to the koveis. He's entitled to get them. The people, when they give them in, they know that there's going to be a certain amount of, a small amount of the threads that's going to come off, and they're not makpid on that. However, if it's more than three, yasser mikain, then hare elu shabalabais, then the balabais is makpid. And Tosfos Yonta points out, he's so machpid at this point in time that, let's say you took out four or five, so not only does he get the one or two above the three, he gets the original three as well. And he says this is similar to Onor, that, okay, I'm willing to forgive you a little bit, but once you cheat me so much, then I get the whole thing back, not just the extra above the amount of the Onor. So to over here, you're entitled as the Koveis to take off one, two, or three. But if you take off four or five, then you don't get entitled to the one, two, or three anymore. When you return it, you have to go and give the one, two, or three that you took off in addition to the fourth and the fifth one that you took off. So that's the rules over here for the launderer, how much he's allowed to keep, how much he's not allowed to keep in these situations. Furthermore, it says, if, however, he's removing black threads from amongst the white threads, so then in that situation, no telesakol, the launderer is entitled to take the whole thing, the hein shelo. They belong to him because he's doing the balabas over here a favor. Then it tells us, Achayid, Achayid is the tailor, Sheshir esachut kidei litvorbo. If after he makes a garment, there is enough thread that's left over for which he could actually do something with, or umatlis, or he leaves over a piece of material, shehi shalosh al shalosh, when it's a feminine, it has to be either amos or etzbos. Amos would be too large, so obviously this means three etzbos, al three etzbos. An etzba is about a little bit less than an inch, so he leaves over something that's about 3 inches by 3 inches, which is useful as a patch, so therefore, these are still useful, the threads that he leaves over, or this little patch of clothing that he leaves over, so they don't belong to him. The one who gave the material, it belongs to him, and the chayit, the tailor, doesn't have a right to go keep it. Now, ma shehechorish motzi b'matzot. Now, a carpenter, when he's going in and making some material out of wood, so there's going to be shavings left over. So that which the carpenter removes, the extra little pieces of wood, the shavings that he removes with a matzot is a certain type of a utensil, some sort of a carpentry tool that shaves off the pieces of wood to fashion it into the kli that he's making, so they belong, hare el shlo. The carpenter is entitled to all the shavings that are left on the floor of his carpentry area, so he gets to keep them. However, if he uses a kashil, ube kashil, Rashi says that this kashil is a much larger instrument, and it chops off much bigger pieces. It's a kardom, it's like an axe, umapil shapoyin gatsin, so it's much bigger pieces of wood that come off, not just shavings, but it's actually pieces of wood, chips of wood, so then they belong shabal habayis. When the person who gave the wood to the carpenter, he said, okay, those little shavings you can keep, but they're big pieces of wood, I want to use them for myself as firewood. So they belong still to the bal habayis, and the carpenter is not allowed to keep them. Then and if he was working in the Bala Bais's house, then even the shavings, never mind the wood, but even the shavings then, the gifts we have is Hanesorim, but it should be Hanesoris, as Rashi says, as we also find in the Mesoris HaShas, Shal Baal HaBais, they belong to the Baal HaBais. As Rashi says, Afilu Dak Dak, even these very, very fine sawdust, Hayotzi Mitachas HaMekadech, to come out over here from his cutting tools, Shehi Dak Bo, it comes out very, very fine sawdust, they belong to the Baal HaBais. Because here, he's working in the Baal HaBais' house. Bereisha, where we said that he gets to keep those shavings, that's dealing with a carpenter that's a cobbler. Shekibo Livno Sabayis Bidomim Ketuvim, he's getting a set amount for his work, so he gets to keep the shavings in that situation. Okay, that's the final Mishnah in the Masechta. The Gemara starts and says, Tadar Rabban, we learn the following Braisa. Lochin mochin min hakoves. You are allowed to take these pieces of wood from the koves of the launderer. Mipnei shein shelo. Because they belong to him. He's entitled to get that little pieces that come off in the laundry. He gets to keep them. He doesn't have to give them back to the Baal HaBayis, to the owner of this garment. Hakovis noto shnei chutim hayonim vein shelo. And likewise, he gets to take off these two threads. Now, this would be kasha. The Mishnah said three threads. Here it says two threads. The Gemara will ask this. But he gets to keep those two threads. They're considered his as well. And we turn to the last Amud in the Masechta of Kuf Yutes Amud Beis. And the Braisa continues and says, the lo yotil bo yoser mishlosha chuvin. He's not allowed to go take more than three chuvin. Now, here we're going to get very technical in terms of the weaving process, which I do not want to do. So we'll just explain this over here. For those who want, the art school has much more detailed pictures and discussion of this. But for our point of view, from the learning that we're doing right now, it's to understand what is the normal, normative way that these items that are questionable, do they belong to the artisan or do they belong to the Baal HaBas? So we're not going to be dealing with this in our lives. This is not something that we do today anymore. So we'll just teach the principles here rather than the technical details of the weaving. In any event, he's not allowed to take these three chubin. These are certain types of loops that he does to go and stretch the garment. So he's allowed to sew no more than three in order to do this. Other than that, he's taking too much. Below Yisro Kabegi Lishisho, he can't go and comb the garment along the chassis. You have the chassis, which is the warp, which is the vertical, and you have the Erev, which is the weft, which is the horizontal. And these are aligned in different ways, and when you comb them in different directions, you're going to either make the garment softer, but you're going to make it more likely to rip because it's softer, or you're going to harden it, but it's not as soft, and it's less likely to rip. So when you're combing this, make sure of a low yisro kabegli shisyo. Don't go and comb it out along the vertical axis, along the chassis axis. Ella li erbo. Do it in the horizontal axis, the Erev axis. Umashveo li arko. And when you go and you do certain things to make it nice and even, so then you do that, you extend it in the orech, in the length, and avalo li rochbo, and not in the width. And when you're stretching it out in this way, you'll have to stretch it out up to a tefach. Again, these are all technical details. The critical point is that you have to follow the norms. And if the norms say that this belongs to the balabas, then it has to be returned to the balabas. If you're allowed to do certain things, then you're allowed to do them. If you're doing more than that, you're not allowed to do it, and you have to pay for the extra things that you're doing. You can't just assume that he's giving it to you. Okay, now, we pointed out already, we said in the Braisa, Shtechutim, in the Mishnah, Va'anantinan Shalosh. So which one is it? Is it two or three? Someone says, Lokasha, it's very simply reconciled. It depends on the thickness of the threads. When you're dealing with very thick threads, so then you only do two. Ha'balimi, in the Braisa said only two because they're very thick threads. Va'abakdini, if they're very thin threads, so then our Mishnah said you're allowed to use three. Okay. Then we said, the lo yisro kabegi lishisio, we said in the Braisa that you can't go and comb it out in the vertical axis, elole erbo, but in the erev axis, in the horizontal axis. But another Braisa is the exact opposite. Batani ifcha, that you must comb it out in the vertical axis and not in the horizontal axis. So see in the two Braises. So what is lokasha? Habaglima, habisarbala. It depends. The first Braisa that says that you have to go do it in the horizontal axis is talking about a certain type of garment that would be very easily ripped. That's a glima. And the second price that it says, you bedavka do it in the vertical axis, so that is talking about habisarbal. That's a different type of a garment that it needs to be done in that way. Again, the technical details over here aren't the important thing. The technical details are specifics to their weaving process, which we don't do today. But the bottom line is you have to follow the established practices that will be appropriate for that particular type of garment. And then we can decide which way is done properly and who gets what if they're leftovers and what you're allowed to do or not allowed to do. Then we said in the Braisa of Lo Yotil Bo Yosef Mishloshu Chubin. He said you can't go and make these loops, these more than three of these loops. Now, Gemara asks, boy, Rav Yirmiya says, Amtuye v'yasuye chad, Odilma, Amtuye v'yasuye trey. Rav Yirmiya is famous throughout Shas for asking these types of questions. We get to the Gemara in Bava Basra, he's going to get thrown out of the base medrash for asking such a kasha, but he'll be returned by the end of the Masechta. So in any event, Rav Yirmiya asks, when we're talking about these loops that you're making, so when we said you're not to do three, so how do you count the three? Is it going from point A to point B, one, and then from point B to point A back again, is that two? Or is it going from point A to point B, and then back from point B to point A, that's considered one? So it says teku. We don't answer for Rav Yirmiya's kasha. Then it said in the Braisa, Umashveyu liarko avololirachbo, when you're going and evening it out, you have to do it along the length and not along the width. Ay, Votani, if another Braisa is the exact opposite, so we give the same terrace like we gave before, Lokasha, it depends on the type of garment. Habaglima, habim yoni, that when you're doing this, it will depend on the garment. Sometimes it's better to do it in the lengthwise, and sometimes it's better to do it in the widthwise, it depends on the garment. Okay. Tan Rabban, we learn the following braisa. Ain't lochim in atzorek. You're not allowed to go purchase from the guy that combs out the wool or the flax over here. Mochin, these tufts of wool, mitnei ain't oshlo, because they don't belong to him. He didn't have a right to go take them, so you can't go purchase it from this guy. However, ubamakum shenagu lioshlo, but if the custom in the place was yet that the owner is not makbid on those pieces of wool, they are entitled to be given to the one who's combing it. So then lochim, then you're allowed to, because he's not a ganav. He's again following the practices of the community. These aren't absolute dinim. This is not halacha l'moshe b'Sinai. These are normative business practices. So in the place where the normative business practices are A, so then you follow the rules of A. If the normative business practices in another place are following the rules of B, so then you have to follow the rules of B. Then the Braisa continues and says, in every place, lochim hen kar mole mochin, the keses blei mochin. But in all places, you're allowed to go and buy for them these kar and kesses, they're often translated as pillows and covers or pillows and mattresses that are filled with these pieces of tufts of wool. How come? If it's geneva in some places, so why are you allowed to do this? So my time, because kinahu bishinoi, because even if it is geneva, so then he made a shinoi in it, and therefore, as we've already learned throughout the Masechta, when you make a shinoi, it doesn't mean you're allowed to do this, it doesn't mean you're a good guy, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be punished for this, but from a financial point of view, you made a shinui and you were kone. So therefore, there's shinui and there's yeyush over here, and therefore you have acquired it, and therefore a person buying it from you has the right to go and buy it from you. Learned another braisa, Tana Rabbanon, ain't lochim migardi, and I'll go purchase from a weaver, lo irin, velo nirin, velo punkolin. Now these are all different types of things that a weaver uses. Now, when he's taking these things, it's with the wool or with the threads of the person who gave them to him. So therefore, he has no right to go and sell these things. He's considered a ganav if he takes these things, and therefore, he can't go and sell them. Likewise, the Braisa continues, v'lo shiur et pikios, he's not allowed to sell any of the leftover wool or threads that he has, because they're not his. He has to return them to the person who gave them to him. However, avolokim, but you are allowed to purchase from these weavers, beged menumar, a spotted garment, or erev ushasi, tovui v'orig, or you're allowed to go and buy from them these threads that were spun into the shesi and erev and woven. Now, Amri, we said, hashpe tovui shokli. You're allowed to go and purchase from them the spun threads. So, orug mibayi, the woven threads, that's the next step in the process. Of course you can. If you can buy the earliest step in the process, certainly you can buy from them the latest step in the process. So, one says, no. My orug, it means TK. It's talking here that it wasn't woven. So, these are two different things. That the first step of the process and the second step of the process is not what we're talking about. We're talking about a first step in the process, and then they're talking about something else, which is its first step in the process, and they're two different things. And therefore, that's why it had to tell us both of them. Similarly, we learn another bride, so Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Lochim and Atzavo, you're not allowed to go and purchase things from the dyer that don't belong to him. For example, Lo Osos, Lo Dugmos, Lo Tlushim Shel Tzemer. And not allowed to purchase all of these different types of wool that were either used to test the dye or to show the dyer what color you want, or pieces that are torn off from the wool. They all belong back to the person. The custom was that the original owner of these is entitled to them back. And if the dyer keeps them, so he's gonvening them, and therefore you're not allowed to go purchase these things when he puts a bunch of them together and sells them, so you're not allowed to go and purchase them from him because they're gonvened. You have to presume that they're gonvened. But if he makes them into a garment, avolok behen beged, savua tavui begodim. That's the gersa that we have. The Bach says it should be ubegodim, which fits in very well with the Gemara. So you are allowed to purchase these garments that were dyed, that were spun, and that were made into full garments. So Gemara gets the question, hashta tavui shalach, you're allowed to buy them the spun thread. So then, of course, when it's made into a garment, begodim you buy it, why would you have to tell me that? So Gemara says again, my begodim, again, it's not the next step in the process. This is namti. Namti is always translated as felt. Rashi has a foreign language word over here, which is always translated as felterish, as felt. And this is something that doesn't requires spinning. So therefore, the begat tzavua tavui is one thing, and then ubegod, that's why you need the vav, ubegod is totally something else that has nothing to do with being spun. So therefore, it has to list both of them. Okay. Another bride, so Tanu Rabbanan, anosing oros li'abdan. If you go and give a hide of an animal to a tanner to go and make it into leather. Hakitsuin vatlushin hareilu shavalabais. Anything that's trimmed off from the hide or anything that's torn off from the wool, they belong to the original owner of this hide. The tanner doesn't get to keep it. The ole, now we have the girsa umishatef bimayim, but it says that the girsa should be mishatef hamayim. Anything that floats up when you're rinsing this over here, hareilu shalom, they do belong to the tanner. Okay, so this is another din in the specifics of this particular business. Then we learned in the Mishnah, in Mayashacha V'chule, that if the koveis, the launderer, goes and takes out more than three black threads from amongst the white threads, so that's allowed, even though three normally said is the limit. Amar Yehuda, Yehuda comes and adds over here a nice, cute thing. He says, Katsra, which is the name of the launderer, he's called the Katsra. Shemei is the name. The Katsara Shokle is because he takes off these little pieces. So he shortens it, that's why he's called the Katsra. Rashi in Shabbos tells us that this is the name for the koveis, the katsra, and kach shemom beloshen yishmo. It says that's the Arabic term for a launderer. They name kovsim, and they are the ones who clean it. And shamati, I heard, omrim al shem shemekatsrim big day tzemer. Oh, that they shorten these woolen garments, kishe darsin ostan biragleim bimayim, when they go and step on them in part of the cleaning process. So that's why they're called katsra. Okay. Review says another day, and I'm review the hakol olulim minin tcheles, that when you're going to figure out where you put the tzitzis, here we're calling the generic term for tzitzis the tcheles. It doesn't only mean the tcheles strands, it means the white strands as well as the blue strands. But when you put them in the garment, they have to be within a certain distance to the corner. So how do you count the corner so there are threads that come off? Do you count them or not? So he says, yes, you count them in the definition of where the tzitzis have to be placed. These threads, even though they may come off eventually, so they're counted in defining where the tzitzis have to be placed. The Yitzchak Beri Kapid Alayu. However, Rav Yehuda said that he had a son, Yitzchak. He says, my son always takes off those threads before he goes and puts on the tzitzis, so he knows exactly in the exact place that it should be, and it shouldn't look like it's in the wrong place. Then we quote the Mishnah, Hachayit, the tailor, Shashir, Es Hachut, Uchulich. That's the way the Girsa should be. So if he leaves some of the threads, they belong, that this leftover thread, they belong back to the Balabayas who gave it to him. No, the Kamal, for how much is considered significant that you can go and sew with it, that has to go back to the Balabayas, and if it's less than that, then the tailor's allowed to keep it. So I'm Ravasi explains, it's Melo Machat, and we have the Girsa V'chutz L'machat. It has to be the amount of the needle and a little bit more. Now, when we say a little bit more, what does it mean a little bit more? So the answer in the base medrash, Yibayluhu, Melo Machat, the chutz l'machat kibol machat, that when you say it has to be the size of the needle, and then beyond that, also the size of the needle, or duma, maybe not. Maybe it means melo machat, and just the chutz l'machat mashu, and a little bit more beyond that, but not, again, the distance of melo machat. So it's like, is it X plus X, or is it X plus a small amount? That's the question. The answer they said, Tashma, bring your raya from the following brisa. The Tanya says the following brisa: Hachayud sheshir esachut pachos mikde liftorbo. If you left over a little bit of thread and you can't sew with it, or you have the matlash bechusim yisholosh yisholosh. So if you have the patch that's less than 3 inches by 3 inches. So bisman shabalabayis makbid aleim. If the balabai says, I even want that small amount, and that's the custom, so then harei elusha balabayis. Then the tailor has to give it back to the balabayis because it's ganev if he doesn't. However, if the Balabai says that's garbage, I don't need that, you can keep it. So Ariel Shalom, then the tailor's allowed to keep it. Now, if you're saying it's X plus X, so then we understand. Because a small amount like that can be used for something. It's able to be used for stitching. If it's only X plus a very small amount, so then it's worthless. Then what's it worth? It's not worth anything. It must be that it's talking about X plus X. That's a good raya. It has to be something significant. And X plus a small amount is not significant. X plus X, that's already considered significant. Then we get to the quote the Mishnah, Masha Chorish Vechule. He said the carpenter is allowed to keep, under certain situations, the shavings, but he can't keep the big pieces of wood. And then we said, when he's doing it in the house of the Balabais, he can't even keep the shavings. Now, this seems to go against, however, the following brisa, or many, we learn the following brisa, Masha Chorish Motzi B'matzah, that shavings which the carpenter gets off with this implement called the matzah, v'hanifsach b'megira, and anything else which he cuts off with the megira, which is some type of a saw, so harei elu shabalabayis, they belong to the balabayis. V'yotzi mitachas makedeach, and anything that comes out from the drill, mitachas ritni, that's a plane, so v'hanigro b'megira, anything that's cut off weight with a saw, harei elu shalom, he gets to keep them. So this is a steer to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that the shavings belong to the carpenter, and here in the Brice it says it belongs to the Balabayas. So which one is it? Some Ravi says, no, they're all talking the same thing. They just have different names for the different implements that are being talked about. The Aswa, the Tana Didan, in the place where the Tana of our Mishnah lived, Ikatarti Chatzine, there are two different types of tools that the carpenter uses. L'rabasi, to the larger one, Kari Le Kashil, that's called the Kardom, that's the axe. And those big pieces of wood that come off, they belong to the Balabayas. But to the smaller one, they call Karli Matzah. They call that the shaving type of tool, and that belongs to the carpenter. Ba'aswa the Tana Barah, but the author of the Brisa, so Chadhu Deika, he says there's only one type of tool that they use, but Karli Matzah, they call it the Matzah. So when you're dealing over here with the very fine shavings, so they belong to the carpenter. But when you're dealing with not such fine shavings, so they belong to the Baal Habayis. So there's no stira between the Brisa and our Mishnah. Mark continues quoting the Mishnah. We said if he was working in the owner's house, if he's working in the Balabais' house, so then even the shavings, even the sawdust, even the little pieces, all the very tiny pieces, all go to the Balabas. Talking about the following brisa, Misatche Avonim, those people that go and chisel stone, Ein Bohem Mishum Gezel, the pieces of the stone that are left behind that they keep, that's not considered Gezel, they're entitled to take them. Mefaske Ilanos, those people that go and cut the trees. Now, all of these are to make the trees better. They're not just cutting down the trees, they're pruning the trees in order to make the rest of the tree go better. Likewise, Mefaske Gifarim, those that go and chop off some of the branches of a vine in order to make the rest of the vines grow better. And likewise, Menakfe Hegai, those people that go and cut off, they weed, they prune some of the branches of a thorn bush. And Menakshe Zram, those that go and take out some of the weeds, they prune some of the unnecessary things that are growing amongst all the dagon, amongst the grains, and the odri yirokos, those people that remove some of the unwanted vegetables, the excess not growing well vegetables from amongst all the other good vegetables. So in all of these situations, bisman shebalabais makbid aleihem, if the balabai says, oh, I want all that stuff that you're taking, so then you have to give it to the balabais because technically it's his. But it would be gezel if you took it from him. Yesh b'm gezel if he's makbid on it. But under most circumstances, ein balabais makbid aleihem, when the default position is that the balabais is not makbid on it, hariel shol, then the worker is allowed to go and keep it because he's doing it for the betterment of the rest of the field. So he's not doing something wrong, and just a question of who gets it. So it depends on the custom. If the owner is makbid, he wants that, so then he's entitled to it. It technically is his. But if he's not makbid on it, which I would think would be the default position in most situations, so then the worker, if he wishes it, is allowed to go and take it. Finally, we come to the conclusion of this Masechta. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda tells us, Kishus, which is hops, like for barley, the chazes, and this is a certain type of immature grain, ain bahem mishum gazel. There is no din of gazel if somebody goes and takes this. Now, what does it mean there is no din of gazel over here? It means that normally this type of thing is not harvested by the owner, and he uses it to go and pasture his animals. So, since he doesn't really care about it, if he doesn't have animals and is planning on using it, anybody else can come in there and go and pasture their animals and take this. However, the asra, the kofte, but if the balabai says, hey, listen, I got my own animals, I want this stuff, then you don't have the right to go and take it from him. And if you go past your animals over there, yesh b'hem mishum gezel, then in fact, you're a ganav because you're taking something that doesn't belong to you, even though it's relatively inexpensive. You're not allowed to steal something just because it's inexpensive. So again, the bottom line rule that we've said over here in all of today's shia, if the person who it technically belongs to is makbid on it and wants it, so then you're not allowed to go take it from him. But if he doesn't care about it, he's not makbid on it, so then the person who wishes to take it is allowed to go and take it. Amar Ravina. Ravina says, Umaso Machasya, this was the city of Maso Machasya, is a place, Asra, the Kof Dehu. Those people, they had animals, as Rashi says, Makom Behemosu, Bitzrichin Lemira. It needs a lot of pasture. And then Rashi adds the word Tov, which is a wonderful way to end the Masechta. And it's interesting, often the Gemara will end off a Masechta, we end off an Esiyim, we always say a nice thing at the end. Sometimes the Gemara will add in totally an almost unrelated item in order to end on a very positive note. So the Mefarshim suggest here that since Bava Kama is not really automatically a separate Masechta by itself, as I mentioned already at the beginning of this year, and many times, there's a concept that the three Bavas is the first part, the second part, and the third part, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, is one big Masechta called Maseches Nezikin. And we have a similar idea by Kalim. There are those that separate Kalim. It's 30 Prokim into 10, 10, and 10. There's a Kalim Kama, Kalim Metzia, and a Kalim Basra, not very commonly referred to in that way, but it's very similar to Maseches Nezikin. And therefore, this really wasn't the end of the Masechta. That's why the Gemara didn't end off this way. But Rashi, in his greatness, wanted to end off his commentary on Bava Kama, and he added the word Lemira Tov. The word Tov wasn't absolutely necessary. He added the word Tov to end off on a positive note. And B'ezus Hashem, we end off Bava Kama on a very positive note. We beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, let this, today, is when I'm dictating this, is actually Purim Katan. Let this Purim Katan be the start of Geula for all of Klai Yisrael, like it was Geula at the time of Purim. Let it be a Yeshua for the Jewish people, and B'ezus Hashem, let there be Shalom on call of Klal Yisrael. Have a wonderful day. B'ezus Hashem, we start Bava Metzia tomorrow.